This is the February 2 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Merrill Crowley of agtradertalk.com from Watseka, Illinois. And Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing. He's in Morton, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org. And right now, you'll find an event that includes all three of these folks. That's at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. On Tuesday, the 7th day of March, our annual all-day Ag Outlook, in conjunction now with the Farm Doc team, the agricultural economist from the U of I, the brokers and analysts from WILL, Ag, along with the Farm Doc team and a couple of others, will be there for the whole of the day. The cost is just $30 for you to join us, and you can do it now at willag.org or go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Either way, you'll get a cinnamon roll and coffee in the morning from the Beef House. That's not something you usually find, and it is really good. And then a Beef House lunch is included as well. Of course, that's on the Eastern time zone, but we make that convenient for you. All the details are online at willag.org, willag.org, or farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Merrill Crowley, I think I'd like to start with you today. Tell me the things that you've been considering since the January USDA report and prior to the upcoming March report at the end of the month. That'll include grain stocks, but more importantly, the prospective plantings figures. And how producers should think about this. We'll start with just maybe old crop corn.
Well, the situation is tight. I mean, doesn't matter if you're talking beans or corn. The U.S. situation is tight. The world situation may be tight, may not be tight. That's going to depend on what kind of production we see out of Brazil. They're slow on getting their crop out, therefore they're slow on getting their safrinha corn planted. So that has the market on edge somewhat. I'm seeing pictures on Twitter where not only are they following the combines with the planters, but the one I saw looked like the planter was trying to push the combine out of the way. So they know how to put a crop in right after they take the other one out. And so there is the thoughts that the weather is going to get a little better for Brazil, a little drier, and that they're going to be able to move a little quicker. So to me, that then puts the whole situation of tightness to the U.S. and how the U.S. works out. And I think if we alleviate the problem of corn supplies with a large safrinha crop, the U.S. only will have to provide maybe some corn before the Brazilian crop comes and gets harvested and brought to the ports.
Now, Chip Nellinger, I know what producers are probably thinking as it relates to their old crop corn. Or at least I think I have an idea. After this January report, they felt relieved that the numbers were supportive to the marketplace. They maybe had some more time. And now they're looking out thinking, well, I maybe have time until I get to July of this year. And if they heard what Merrill Crowley has to say, they know that that crop that will be put in the ground, the safrinha crop in Brazil, will be harvested about that same time, which means May and June would be the time we're finishing planting up here, and that they would be in serious trouble potentially if they have a drought in South America, and they're thinking, hey, I can wait that out. The question really is, should they?
Well, Todd, I think Merrill did a good job of kind of lining out how this market is going to play out, and it's kind of, you know, an either-or situation. Either they have a big crop, they're going to plant a lot of acres if they can, more than a year ago. If they have a big crop in Brazil, our exports are going to fall off the face of the earth very quickly, and it's not going to seem as tight as what it does right now. And so I don't want to put myself in a position to where I have to hope for a weather problem or a production problem on that second crop corn season in Brazil. They've had essentially three weather problems in a row, although it was Argentina only this year, but that's the third in a row. I don't want to bet on a ongoing drought. So, you know, as I'm looking at it, we've had pushes up near $7 in a lot of areas, slightly over. depending on where you're at and what your basis is. I don't know that I want much more than gambling stocks or minimal amount or some call spreads or call options to bet on, you know, some huge weather problem in South America. I'm very fearful that, you know, these funds have put a ton of money to work in the month of January and the first couple of days of February. You know, what's going to be the next thing that is going to have them adding on to that position? And it's only a weather scare at this point, as I see it. And that's a little bit dangerous, I think, you know, to assume we're just going to keep skyrocketing higher going forward.
There are three corn crops, Matt Bennett, that are raised in Brazil. The first crop makes up a small chunk, but a sizable amount. The second crop is about 70%, and that last crop is 1.6% or thereabouts. So that third crop, which isn't really harvested until August, September, doesn't make too much of a difference. But the 70% that we're talking about, the safrinha, does make a difference on the world marketplace. It competes for the exports. When you look at the global stocks figures, what do they tell you about the need for this supply in the marketplace? And conversely, for the need for exports out of the United States.
Well, whenever you look at the global stocks, you know, what the USDA showed us is that essentially we lost the forecast that we're losing about 59 million metric tons of production as far as the world's concerned. Now, the problem is that carryout's only going down 10 million tons. And so what we know to be a fact, if you will, for today, as far as the USDA is concerned, or whatever the printed fact is, you can call it what you want. But, you know, we've lost demand. There's no question about it. And so not only have we lost demand on the global balance sheet, but we've lost demand domestically. So, of course, the report was friendly, as you suggested, domestically here in the U.S. for old crop. But you got to remember, we also took 185 million bushels of demand out. You know, in the situation that we're in as far as the USDA is concerned. So, you know, how bad do we need the U.S.? I mean, ultimately, I know China's in talking about they want to be buying Black Sea region corn. They also want to be buying Brazilian corn. I don't think they want U.S. corn, but if they are in actively hunting bushels, there's no question that we could pick up some business that we aren't necessarily planning on. So, you know, whether they're going to buy off the U.S. or not, if they're buying global corn, I think it's a good situation. But, you know, I think once again, I would agree with what the previous two guys, Merrill and Chip, said. Here's the thing. Whenever you take demand out of the equation and you're losing demand, then essentially you're on the hope strategy, that you're hoping that someone has a weather issue. And so that's all you've got to hang your hat on if you want to be bullish at the types of levels that we're at. So I think we need to take a long, hard look at, you know, what are we willing to risk moving forward when we're already printing record prices, or at least profit margins. You look at Illinois, 214 statewide yield, you know, a 214 statewide yield. And like Chip said, there's a lot of $7 corn bids out there. You know, I'm no math major, but I know the math behind that. It looks pretty good to me.
Chip, I do have a secondary question as it relates to the near term. This week, the Chinese said that they were going to release potentially into auction some rice stocks, probably a lot of them, I would think. That had an impact on the corn market for just a bit. And last year, they pinned a new agreement with the Brazilians to purchase corn. This is really the first time that's been done from them. So the safrinha crop, or maybe the first crop corn, in fact, that they're bringing in. How do these two things play out in the marketplace? So it just seems that China, on one hand, is saying we would like corn from the international market, Brazilian corn in particular, maybe some from the Black Sea, but we're also going to put rice stocks, which I suppose could be fed into the marketplace, and I don't get exactly what they're up to.
Yeah, you know, I think you have to take with a grain of salt whatever they make the announcements of releasing stocks. You just never know what they're doing. They could be older, off-quality stocks. They're just kind of, you know, turning the inventory a little bit. So I don't know if you can read too much into that. What I read into, though, is they want corn, but they don't want to buy it from us unless they absolutely have to. They're going to buy Brazilian corn if there's a supply there. I think the other thing to keep in mind, too, is that very quietly, the last 2 years, China did not have very good crops. So you know, they're going to do all they can. That was Mother Nature. They had some flooding. They had some drought issues. They did not have very good crops. They're not going to tell you that, but by their actions in the world market, it has to be that. And you can look and see what the weather patterns were, the temperatures and rainfall. So it's not a stretch to think they've had a couple back-to-back crops. If they bounce back with a better crop this year in South America, that second crop, corn in Brazil, is plentiful. They are going to take every bushel they want and need from them and not us. And, you know, the market's already factored in, to Matt's point earlier, of some lower demand. But, you know, I don't know. I just fear that we're in this pendulum swinging from really tight stocks the last two or three years because of production problems in different parts of the world. And now we're starting to swing it the other way to where we're starting to refill the world pipeline and get these stocks, you know, a little more comfortable. And, you know, there's a psychological aspect to this, too. We could talk the entire, you know, show about this. But, you know, producers have been used to $7 corn for going on 3 years now. You look out there at the new crop, you see, well, 594 December futures. That doesn't look very good. I'm going to wait till $6.50 or $7. You know, there's a whole psychology to this that there's money at $6. If we have a 50-cent correction and go back to 550 or 5.25, you know, then you're back into what Matt was talking about. You're sitting there with the crowd hoping for a weather problem somewhere to bail us out, and hope is the worst marketing plan in the world.
I will say that in their recent webinar, the agricultural economist from the University of Illinois put the season's average cash price for new crop corn at $5.20. Merrill Crowley, anything to add on the fundamentals that we've been talking about? Or if not, might you have something on the technical or the chart side that you've been finding of interest?
Yes, to both of those. I did a study comparing past drought prices following past prices in the year following a drought. In that, it basically says that you don't expect much of a high over 673 for new crop Dees corn or 1572 for new crop Novembers. And that's a small study. It doesn't necessarily mean these are going to hold. It's interesting to note, though, that December corn has a 679.25 high, and November beans so far have a 1448. But this occurs constantly, and it's the question, and Chip touched on it when he talked about, you look at where our price is here now, and then you look at new crop, and you say, well, that's not what I want. I want to wait. Well, if you look at these years, Pat, following a drought year, it tells you that you're not likely to see the highs much better than what I just gave you here if you use those averages from past years. And you go to look at, say, those past years and what the market did. 2013 is the most recent and probably has the most likelihood of being correct compared, say, to a 1989 type chart, because we didn't have all this stuff going on worldwide that we do now. And that shows the market's holding for a while. You get a good weather bump, but basically it's lower throughout the year, unless politics or weather changes. Now, getting back real quick to Brazil, we're talking about a lot of corn, a lot of beans coming out of Brazil to cure our problems. And maybe the other guys have an answer for this, but a question I have, and I'm starting to try to find if I can see an answer, is, does Brazil have the export facilities to handle the amount of corn and beans we are expecting from it?
That is a good question, and we may need to talk with Joanna Colucci from the FarmDoc team about that. She talks a lot in a webinar today that I helped to host and is online at FarmDoc Daily now about the export facilities, but not about their capacity. Matt or Chip, do you have an idea on this one?
I don't know specifically, Todd. My take is that they have spent a lot of money the last several years, you know, in roads, in port facilities. I know that they're lacking storage, but they use, you know, bags, you know, probably to a much greater extent than we do here in the United States. I don't know. I kind of think that they're probably pretty ready for that. And, you know, I think this crop that they're about to harvest will give us a good test of how well they can handle the logistics of a big crop.
We talk about this with our sister company, JSA, quite a bit. And there's no doubt that the logistical issues in Brazil have a whole lot less to do with the ports. And they have a lot more to do with getting grain to the ports. And so, you know, I do think that they can handle whenever it comes to ports. As Chip suggested, not only have you seen a lot of money spent by the Brazilian government, but you've seen a heck of a lot of investment from the people that are wanting to buy their products the most, and that's China. And so you've seen a significant amount of money infused into Brazil to try to get that crop, whenever it gets harvested, out on the world market significantly quicker. And so, you know, I think that the ports are probably going to be able to keep up. I think the biggest thing is continuing to invest in infrastructure to be able to, you know, get this massive crop hauled to town, so to speak.
I would say that the ABCs, ADM, Bunge, and Cargill have all invested in their own facilities there. The Bunge facility, I think, is the most important, though. It's in Rosario, Argentina. And that might have an issue, though I've not heard, again, I've talked about this a little bit, related to availability of water in the river. We've not heard about that this year, although that's been an issue in the past during drought. So we'll find out more probably about that later. So just going around the horn, on new crop corn, what should producers do at this point? How much do you think that they need maybe to have priced out, given that we're now in the middle of the beginning, I guess, given now that we're in the beginning of the crop insurance setting season? Merrill, I'll start with you.
Well, years following a drought or a crop reduction tend to see the highs come early in the year. And by early, I'm talking, say, March, April, May. There are some interesting cycles coming due in May, some of them short-term, some of them long-term, which would suggest we might see the highs early April, maybe a late March. The thing that you can do, and it's up to each individual's taste, you can sell your crop. And if we were to have a drought, let's be honest, the prices, if we have a drought in South America or even here in the U.S., our prices would be much higher. I'm sure that they would agree, the people here on the would agree that you're probably going to be higher than you were in 2012. And with that in mind, if you're really worried about it, it's profitable sales. That's for one thing, as long as you have the crop. But if you're really worried about it, you can buy, it's a $8 Dease call. And it would cost about 10 cents, and you could sell a 490 put and take in 9.25. Neither one of those figures are probably going to be hit unless you get close to the 490 put for some reason. So basically, you're not spending a lot of money. You could buy $17 November calls and sell the 1160 puts, and it's about a penny, a half a cent into the account. So again, not a lot of cost to make sure you've got something up there for disaster results and still be able to sell comfortably at some good prices.
Chip Nellinger, new crop corn sales, where should producers be again?
Yeah, I think you should be 15% range, maybe 20, just within the last couple of days here. In fact, starting today and hopefully tomorrow and the first of next week, starting to implement some June or July short-dated put strategies out there as well on another 20-30% of the crop. I think it's time to play defense against a potential big second crop corn in Brazil. That's my biggest fear going forward the next 90 days.
And Matt?
Yeah, I mean, we earlier on had some sales on through HTAs, but we also had protection on, which was essentially going to protect in our crop insurance price. And so we had a level of protection that was flexible, that was locking in worst case scenario for our crop insurance price at $6. We're going to have to address that because those were through March short data. I know Chip was talking about short dated options, a phenomenal tool for producers who want to lock in the price of December corn or have some sort of a floor under it or be able to utilize the fall harvest price in some way. without having to pay full, value for those. But we're actually protected up to 50%. And so once we get into the month of February, of course, we're going to have all that 30-35% the producers, put in through this insurance play. We're going to have to decide, do we want to extend coverage? And it would be through a strategy actually pretty similar to what Chip's talking. We just want to do some sort of a short-dated strategy to put a floor in place in the event that we come in here and we produce another big corn crop, out of Brazil. Because last year, the bean crop wasn't worth a darn, but actually the safrinha crop turned out pretty good. So, ultimately, if we see something like that again, we've got to feel like with big acreage coming from the U.S., with lower demand, that you could see, price levels down from here. So I definitely want to be playing defense here.
On that acreage note, USDA will hold its Ag Forum this month. In October, it released the baselines, and these are the numbers that they'll start with, but they will change or might change during the forum. I do want to talk a little bit about acreage. I'll start with corn acreage, but I want to transition to soybeans here at this time for the rest of the program. So last year, U.S. farmers planted 88.6 million acres of corn, says USDA, in their final crop production figures for January of this year. That would be the 2022 crop acreage. For the baseline for this coming year, they think 92 million acres of corn might be put in the ground. That, of course, could be adjusted. Those are just October baseline numbers. And then on soybeans last year, 87.5 million. USDA has that number at 87 this year. So I'm wondering, Chip, what you think of the numbers, 92 for corn, 87 for soybeans, and how much USDA might adjust it, and what farmers are telling you about the crop they'll put in this season?
Yeah, this is probably my least favorite topic, Todd, is acres. You don't see big swings across the heart of the Corn Belt, the I states. That's not where your big swings come from. Your big swings in acreage come from the South, the Delta area, and they come from the Dakotas. The people that I've talked to aren't real enthused about corn. Now, the one thing I would say is that we have started to see some fertilizer and nitrogen prices come down. And I don't know how much remains unbooked at this point or not applied already, but that could be something that would swing it. I just don't know in this input environment and price environment how you make a big leap in corn acres. That's just my two cents, and we're going to fight that out in the market here, for many months to come.
Merrill, not one of Chip's favorite topics, though clearly you've been thinking about this as well.
I agree with Chip, not one of my favorite topics. The only thing I'm looking at here, basically, you still have the corn-bean ratio, 2.3 to 1. That's not really pushing people to plant beans, but most of the people I talk to are saying they've got everything pretty well figured out. Chemicals bought, insurance or fertilizers locked in. I haven't heard a lot of them saying they have the nitrogen locked in, but they do have most everything else and have pretty well decided on what they're going to have. So could we see a 92? I suppose we could. I think you're going to have to get it. You will get a better idea of what your acreage is going to be once we get through this month and we get a better idea where our insurance values are going to be. The average today, 595.6 and 1365. So, where are those going to be at? Because that'll have a lot to do with how people decide to plant those acres that they're saving aside for any kind of change that happens.
Yeah, I think whenever you look at this, I mean, we've been using 91 corn, 88 beans. We felt like in the harvest time frame when most people were buying fertilizer, if they didn't prepay, obviously they didn't get a whole lot of relief by then. So those who bought fertilizer in the middle of harvest are putting in what is the most expensive corn crop that we've put in the ground. Whenever you fertilizer prices, you've seen a little bit of relief there, as Chip suggested. So I think coming into the game, there was a lot of money made with corn for anybody who actually had a crop. No question about it. And so you've got to think that corn still wins the battle. But then, you can't discount the fact that we saw over 3 million extra acres of wheat on January 12th. Now, there's a big question mark on how much abandonment might you see if the weather continues to get better and we don't see abandonment. I don't think that you get above 180. I think that the 92 and 87, as far as combined acres, might not be too far off. But I guess I'm along with Chip. Whatever your number is, you have to understand that with nat gas absolutely plummeting, it's going to provide some opportunities for growers. I wouldn't want to be the first one buying anhydrous, because all the anhydrous that is stocked up for folks was bought not when anhydrous was nat gas was 250, you know, as far as what we're looking at now. So I think if you're flexible moving forward, you could see your costs actually go down a little bit. And if corn still hangs in there close to $6, I think that your profit margins on corn might suggest that swing acres go towards corn. So I'm still going to stick around that 91.88.
Well, Merrill, tell me about the ratio you discussed, some of the acreage things that we've talked about here, and what that means for the new crop price going forward in soybean.
Yeah, usually you don't see beans and corn kind of even out unless it's more like 2.4, 2.5. And really 2.5 is probably where we'd have to get some of these people to decide to maybe put more beans in this year. It's been running 2.2, 2.3. Like I said, it's been favoring the corn market as far as dollars and cents. And I think even FarmDoc came out with their prices showing that the corn is going to give you a better revenue than the beans will. And so it basically gets back to weather and what's going to occur there, whether or not and the insurance price, because, you know, that didn't guarantee having that basic put underneath your crop. It's just it's hard to replace any other way.
Stocks to use ratios, predictions for this year in comparison to previous years, just some quick numbers for soybeans. 4.6% in 21-22. The current year at 4.8%. USDA has the baseline for the coming year at 5.5, the FarmDoc team at 4.7. Those are all kind of really close in range. There is a big difference if you take a look at what the numbers for the stocks to use ratios look like for corn. 21-22, 9.2%. We had a $6 cash average price, by the way. 8.9% for this current year, a 670 season's average cash price. October baseline from USDA is 11.7% with a 570 cash price. And the FarmDoc team says it's lower than that at 520 with a 14.1% stocks to use ratio. So the numbers in Chicago are saying plant corn, but the stocks to use ratios, as we see them predicted by both USDA and the FarmDoc team, kind of say, well, maybe stick with soybeans. Really depends on how much money, I suppose, you're going to make, Matt Bennett. When you pencil it out, which one do you think you make more money on?
That's a great question. I really don't see most producers changing their, ratio of corn versus bean acres. I think most of the producers we work with are going to go corn to beans, beans to corn. A lot of money's been made as far as soybeans are concerned here over the last few years. We know Illinois with a statewide yield of 63. You know, you take that and you take that times the 14.20 average cash price, you know, in all honesty, that's a heck of a lot of money. And so, yeah, we know corn made good money too, 2.14, you know, 6.70. I mean, that's a lot of money as well. I don't really see a huge difference. I think that when it gets right down to it, you're probably going to be able to pencil more profit as far as corn's concerned, whenever I run the numbers. But at the same time, I don't think that producers want to go super heavy on corn or even corn on corn, given to what it costs to do that, because there's no question, even with a little bit lower dry fertilizer and anhydrous prices, it's going to be awfully expensive to go corn on corn. So I just don't see the producer's mindset on what their on what their acreage is change a whole lot.
One last topic I'd like to take up before we get to your final words. And Merrill Crowley, I will start with you on this for the week. The Federal Reserve raised the interest rates by another quarter point. What is the potential for recession, inflation to continue? And what issues, problems does that create domestically and on the global economic scene?
Well, demand is going to be whittled away if you take and increase the interest rate on the dollar. We trade worldwide based on the dollar now. So Russia, China, even they're talking Brazil and Argentina are trying to get off of this dollar base. But as long as they're on this dollar base, when they buy imports, they have to have dollars. And as we have increased the interest rate here in the U.S., as the Fed has increased that, that is costing people that want to buy and import more money. Add to that the high prices where we're at now, and we're seeing demand slow. And that's right now about the only reason I see for the demand slowing, especially for a country like China. Now, it's going to take a while for China to come out of their 3 years of COVID restrictions and get businesses back up and everything humming like normal. But still, we're seeing these numbers come down. Soybean demand, they've got a big hog herd, so they should be feeding plenty of meal and using plenty of beans in their rations. They are trying to shift, and that's the other thing that we're seeing. We're seeing them shift to feed wheat. I think last I knew, Australia had 8 million metric ton of feed wheat to sell, and we've been seeing China buy wheat from Australia. They're starting to buy sorghum again as a another product to use. They're going to 13 to 18 million metric ton of rice is going to be sold out into the feed market to help cut costs there. So these high prices are doing just exactly what they're supposed to be doing. They're trying to get people to substitute other things for prices. Well, you add to that then the deflationary part of higher interest rates costing more money, you're going to reduce your demand. We're seeing here in the U.S. that people are starting to move to, a survey from FarmDoc found that 41% started buying a cheaper brand, 38% started reducing the amount they purchased from restaurants, 25% started using a food budget, 52% had to reduce their red meat purchases, and for dairy and eggs, those declined were about 30%. So you're seeing this occur here, and it's my understanding there are worse situations in these other countries. And so if everybody's starting to pull back, starting to, you know, conserve, you're going to see a bigger drop in demand than what I think a lot of people are looking at.
Chip Nellinger, anything on the macroeconomics?
Well, I think Merrill did a good job of giving an overview. I do think that, you know, there's only one time really in the 70s that we can kind of go back and compare the current situation. And number one, the Federal Reserve has said all along, we're going to keep rates higher longer than what people think. The reason they say that is because in the 70s, you had exactly happen what's happening right now. They raised interest rates. We had a little setback in inflation, and then we kind of had a double peak. And so I think the Federal Reserve is critically aware of that, and they're not going to lower rates anytime soon. They might stop raising them, but I don't think the threat of inflation is over. And it appears to me like the economy is a little bit stronger than what the Federal Reserve would even like at this point. So if it stays strong, then you kind of risk, you know, another dose of inflation. To all that, though, I don't necessarily know that second peak means that commodities in general have to have some huge rally. To Merrill's point, these higher prices are starting to ration demand. If we have bigger stocks with a big South American crop on top of an average crop here, then we're going to rebuild stocks in the world, and inflation doesn't necessarily mean that our grain markets, you know, have to rally either.
Anything to add, Matt? And your final word, please.
Oh boy, they covered most of the bases. I think when it'd be the weirdest recession. I'm not saying we're not going to go into one, but with unemployment low, I mean, obviously we're not growing the GDP like you'd like to see, but at the same time, I've got to think that these interest rates, like Chip, I don't know they're going to keep going up significantly. I think this quarter that they took in January might be the last one we see for a couple months, but that's just my personal opinion. But as far as my last word goes, I mean, again, I think that people might hear, you know, me talk and think that I'm bearish. I think I'm more of a cautious tone. There's still a lot of money on the table. I want a flexible strategy by all means, but I don't want to be sitting on my hands whenever I'm still looking at the ability to pencil good profit. I think we got to be proactive here in 23 because we don't want to be sitting around here 6 months from now wondering why we didn't sell any $6 corn and $14 beans.
Let's get final words from Merrill Crowley and Chip Nellinger as well. Chip, we'll start with you.
Yeah, you know, to add on to Matt's point, you know, I guess don't discount the fact that there's profitability out there right now in a new crop position. And, you know, get the bottom line zeroed in, sharpen the pencil, know where you're at on costs, and don't get caught in the psychology that just because we've sold $7 corn for 3 years and $15 plus beans for the last 3 years, that we have to do it again for 23. There's profitability there. You got to have a plan to take advantage of it. And there's ways to do that and still retain some upside should we get into a weather problem in Brazil or here this summer.
And Merrill Crowley.
Historically, recessions start about 17 months after the 2s and 10 of the Treasury curve has inverted for 3 months. So basically, this guy is saying on average, we should expect some sort of recessionary actions around October of this year. I think the big word that I keep hearing myself when I listen to everybody talking today has been the flexibility. I think the situation just calls for more flexibility, calls for the realization that usually years following a drought, the persons don't want to sell because they're looking at old crop prices versus new crop prices and thinking the old crop can get up to those prices. It would take weather or politics to push us that way. And basically, when we're marketing, we've got hope and fear, and those are the main challenges. It takes discipline and planning to overcome these emotional distractions. So get your pencil ready, start pushing it, and then get yourself some levels set. And if you have troubles or need help, any one of us three would be more than willing to sit down with you and help you work through a marketing plan.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like on our website at willag.org or search it out in your favorite podcast application. Our panelists for the day have included Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Merrill Crowley of AgTraderTalk.com in Watseka, Illinois, and Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net in Windsor, Illinois, all three of whom will join us at the All Day Ag Outlook on the 7th day of March at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We have a great lineup, including these three other analysts that you hear on our air, along with the agricultural economist, the Farm Doc team from the University of Illinois, and a representative from John Deere talking about visions and AI and automation. Should be a fantastic day. The cost is only $30. That includes coffee and rolls in the morning and your Beef House lunch at the noon hour. Sign up today. Don't wait at willag.org or at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.